Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's the 22nd of October 2020. This podcast is going to be another one in our series called Interesting Times, which deals with current affairs. This one's going to deal with the revolving door between politics and political power and corporate power, and the way in which personnel belong very frequently to both institutions of capitalist society, sometimes on a revolving door kind of basis, in which somebody will leave a ministry and then go and work for a corporation on the understanding that they have some influence through their contacts with the political sphere, which they will be able to wield on behalf of the corporation in question. Sometimes simultaneously, people can be involved in politics and corporate governance at the same time. I'm going to concentrate on the UK situation mostly, perhaps a passing mention of some US stuff. Maybe that for another day, but I'll also draw your attention to past podcasts going back maybe a year or two that I've done about the military-industrial complex, which do point out this same phenomenon of the revolving door. I'm also going to do a brief section on how the media is involved with this as well, how a kind of a cabal of people who are known to each other and perhaps related to each other and allied to each other politically actually exert power in the UK through these three institutions and through the entanglement, the intimate entanglement of these three institutions of media, state and mega corporations. I will probably be using this material in the next episode of the What is Fascism series that we've been doing. This third episode of What is Fascism is going to deal with the economy. And it's going to take seriously Mussolini's characterisation of fascism as the complete entanglement of state power and corporate power. One of the ways that this happens is through the revolving door, in which there's a seamless movement of personnel between state, corporation and media. Another way that it happens is that corporations get to have a big say in the writing of policy. And obviously it works the other way as well, that state power makes it known to the corporations what it requires of them. Anyway, it's all very cosy. Sometimes people can occupy positions in these various wings of the oligarchy at the same time. Other times they slip seamlessly between them. Anyway, this is about recounting some current affairs that do seem to give some evidence that we have a sort of proto-fascist underpinnings to our economy in the UK. So my first example is taken from the proceedings of the UK House of Commons. On October the 16th, Richard Bergen, a Labour MP and a Corbynist left-wing Labour MP, a lawyer by trade, a solicitor by trade, Richard Bergen questioned the Secretary of State for Health, Matt Hancock. Hancock was actually in the House, but Richard Bergen was delivering his question over the internet, and there are screens now around the inside of the House of Commons so that there can be a certain amount of social distancing in the chamber. Anyway, Bergen was at home in Yorkshire or wherever it is he lives, and Hancock was there on the floor of the house. And Richard Bergen takes up the case of Serco. Now, Serco, you will have heard me mention if you've listened to my What Is Fascism series, is an outsourcing company. It's a very large company, billions of pounds of business come its way. It's a for-profit company, obviously, and it deals with such things as, well, they put it, this is rather euphemistic, looking after asylum seekers. They also do things like transporting prisoners and even having some input into prisons. Serco has been given a contract to manage a test and trace of people who test positive with coronavirus or COVID-19 and attempts to trace their contacts so that they can be informed and they can self-isolate and that the pandemic can be quelled to some degree. The government, in its wisdom, decided that this was best done by a private corporation. They do believe everything is best done by a private corporation. Anyway, Bergen was asking Hancock on the 16th of October about this and about the poor record that Serco actually have. Maybe only contacting a third of the people they need to contact. I should say that the CEO of Serco, one Rupert Soames, a brother of Nicholas Soames and a grandson of Winston Churchill, so somebody who hasn't exactly dragged himself up to the heights of corporate power by sheer hard work from the gutter upwards, silver spoon kind of waller. But I have to say that, you know, to be balanced there, if that means anything, that Soames challenges the figures, but it seems pretty unequivocal from what I've said that they have made a pig's ear of it. At the same time, Serco's profits have surged. I think they had an 18% share surge since taking on this role in the pandemic. Now, Richard Bergen wanted to make a point that the Minister of State for Health, who was in post at the time that Serco was awarded the contract, himself was at one point in his career Serco's chief spin doctor. This is what Richard Bergen called him, Serco's chief spin doctor. And this person is one Edward Agar MP, who was also early in his political career in the Justice Ministry as an Undersecretary of State for Justice in 2018, at the time when Serco was awarded some contract to do with prisoners and prisons. Interesting. Now, Edward Agar was, a bit before he went into politics, elected in 2013 to the CBI, Confederation of British Industry, as a representative. And was also a member of Westminster Council at some point in this early part of his career. And when he was elected to the CBI, he characterised himself as the head of public affairs for Serco UK and Europe. In other words, Richard Bergen's characterisation as Serco's chief spin doctor isn't too far off the mark. So here we go, you know, contacts, intimate knowledge of how the corporation works and all the rest of it. So a bit of a revolving door on that one, both in terms of Serco's work in justice and inverted commas, and in its work as operatives in the attempt to manage the pandemic through test and trace. Now, I'll mention here in passing that Serco also seems to have a bit of a hand in the government's outsourcing strategy. And I'm going to go into this in the podcast I've been talking about, What is Fascism 3, The Economy. But yeah, Serco's imbrication with the state is clearly very intimate and very entangled. The ideology underpinning all this, of course, is that private is best. And this is basically the way that Matt Hancock attempted to come back to Richard Bergen. He was very rattled by it. A commentator called Maximilian Robespierre, who has a YouTube channel, described this as Matt Hancock caught with his trousers down over Serco corruption. And Hancock called the Test and Trace Service the Serco Test and Trace Service rather than the NHS Test and Trace Service, which the Tories have been calling the service up to this point in the attempt to make it look as though Serco is a wing of the NHS rather than a private for-profit company. And not only did he expose the real goings-on with that slip of the tongue, but he also attempted to spin the whole thing as teamwork, as a partnership, as working together, as a partnership between private and public, and so forth. Because local authorities are involved as well, and local health, healthcare trusts, and so on. But it seems pretty clear there's the old revolving door is going on here, and Serco have had $12 billion to do this job. Made a complete cock up of it. Their track and trace app hardly worked. They're just really not making a very good job of it. And why should they? This seems to be something that would be better dealt with by healthcare professionals, epidemiologists, and public health offices. When you start looking at the British economy, you find that these entanglements, this revolving door business, is all over the place. And recently, Grace Blakely, in an episode of Double Down News on YouTube, pointed out how some members of the UK government are involved in this revolving door. And she also mentioned some political grandees who similarly are mixed up in this rather nefarious business. It was on the 5th of October this year. Double Down News is a YouTube channel, as I think I mentioned. Interestingly, Priti Patel, UK Home Secretary, as in the past, earned up to £1,000 an hour on behalf of a firm which works for the Home Office, take contracts for the Home Office, where she now actually works. Nice revolving door there, from working for a firm that's getting Home Office contracts to actually working in the Home Office itself as the Home Secretary. Sajid Javid, who resigned over a spat with Dominic Cummings as Chancellor, but went from being the Chancellor of the Exchequer straight to JP Morgan, one of the biggest investment banks in the world. The current Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, is a graduate of Goldman Sachs. Notice I say graduate. Goldman Sachs are somewhat like the Jesuits. They're the intellectual wing of finance capital. People go there to be trained in the black arts of involving corporate finance capital with government. Certainly, heads of central banks are very frequently Goldman Sachs people. The previous head of the European Central Bank, the president, was Mario Draghi, who was a Goldman Sachs alumnus. The current head, Christine Lagarde, I don't think was a alumnus of Goldman Sachs, but was a finance minister in the French government and the head of the International Monetary Fund. Again, a pretty kind of close circle. Trump's first financial person, the person he appointed into his first cabinet, was Goldman Sachs alumnus. They're absolutely everywhere, these guys. And I kind of liked them to kind of like financial Jesuits. It's a Jesuitical kind of, almost like an order. Anyway, Rishi Sunak's one of those, which means you shouldn't trust him, in my honest opinion, Your Honour, as far as you could throw him. Tony Blair, Grace Blakely mentions Tony Blair's huge consultant and speaking fees, hundreds of thousands of pounds since he stepped down from Prime Minister. So he's doing kind of quite nicely out of a kind of a political and corporate interaction. And this is not a glitch in the system. To quote Grace Blakely, it's integral to the way the system works. So Mussolini would be sort of quite pleased with this if he could come back from the dead and take a little look around. He'd smile and think, this is pretty cool. And I did mention that you can have this kind of simultaneous involvement with both of these spheres. And the case of Jacob Rees-Mogg, leader of the House of Commons, who heads up a hedge fund called Somerset Capital Management, which was founded in 2007, whilst being a Member of Parliament, is interesting, to say the least. He's a staunch Brexiteer and a hard Brexiteer, a member of the European Research Group, the people who want absolute no deal, so they can turn the UK into a modern feudal state in which there is an impoverished but reasonably well-educated working class locked into debt, peonage and precarious work, which will make the place attractive to international capital to come and set up enterprises and take advantage of this cheap and not so powerful labour force. And to take advantage of lax regulation around workers' rights and environmental protection and so on, which previously EU membership did require. So Rees-Mogg, of course, famously moved in good time to escape any consequences of Brexit, moved the headquarters of his hedge fund to Dublin in Ireland, so as not to be caught in the blast, as it were. I'll turn now to the example of the press and the way in which there's a revolving door between press and government also. Recently, Boris Johnson appointed a press secretary along the American model. Normally in the UK, civil servants don't comment to the press. So this is a novel thing, even though it's the way the relationship between the president, certainly, and the press in the US works. There's a press secretary who stands up at a press conference and delivers some sound bites. Now, Johnson decides he wants that model, and he appointed one Allegra Stratton as his press secretary. Now, Allegra Stratton is married to James Forsyth, who is the political editor of The Spectator, a right-wing magazine owned by the Barclay brothers, who are billionaires with a private island in the Channel Islands, who also own The Telegraph. James Forsyth and Allegra Stratton, when they got married, Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, was the best man. In fact, Sunak and Forsyth were friends, school friends at Winchester, one of these posh torture chambers where the apparatchiks of state are educated and conditioned for the job. Now, The Spectator, as I just mentioned, owned by the Barclay brothers through a company called Press Holdings Group, the head of which is Andrew Neil, the famous BBC Rottweiler, the most feared interviewer in the world, who regularly trashes people, particularly on the left. Interestingly, in the 2019 election, Boris Johnson refused to being interviewed by Neil, knowing that he'd pretty well get mashed up. Actually, I don't think Neil is overrated. He's got a few cheap tricks of gotcha style stuff, and he's fairly erudite and well read and stuff. But he's not a thinker by any means, and they were to tell him to fuck off, really, to be honest with you. Neil, though, kind of arrived at this position through a career, having kind of worked for Murdoch's Sunday Times between 83 and 94. That is 1983 and 1994. And at one point, he was actually Boris Johnson's boss at The Spectator, when Boris Johnson was the editor-in-chief of The Spectator in 1999 to 2005. So we've got a nice little coterie of people, all sort of revolving around The Spectator, owned by these billionaires who also own The Telegraph, also very right wing. It's like a cabal or a coterie, whatever you want to call it. The Spectator had actually been around a long time, since 1828. In fact, it's the oldest magazine, weekly magazine in the world. And it's not gutter press, but nevertheless, it's pretty far right, I would say. They try and style themselves as centre right, but to my mind, this is far right shit. And they're working for billionaires at the end of the day. Now, some more interesting connections. Legra Stratton, Johnson's press secretary. Johnson, of course, you know, was the editor of the Spectator at one point for a reasonable period, for 6 years, editor-in-chief. Now, she's married the political editor of The Spectator. Now, one of James Forsyth's colleagues at The Spectator is Mary Wakefield, who's a commissioning editor at The Spectator, who, interestingly, is married to, guess who? Dominic Cummings, who's a close ally and friend with Lee Kane, who's the Downing Street Director of Communications. So they actually even live in the same bloody neighbourhood. You know, the Stratton and Forsyth, husband and wife team, live in Islington, very close to Dominic Cummings and Mary Wakefield, husband and wife team, connection with The Spectator. Of course, Cummings also headed up Vote Leave and therefore has a close connection with Michael Gove, who is one of the Vote Leave Wallers. Michael Gove's a very old friend with Dougie Smith, who's one of Johnson's other advisers. Actually married to Munira Misra, who is head of the Number 10 policy unit, and has a connection with another chief advisor, Sir Edward Lister, as a chief strategic advisor of Johnson, through a City Hall connection, the London City Hall. And so very cosy, very, 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 very cosy. And this kind of thing, as I say, is not uncommon. So there you got it. Some examples that are current. You know, this Boris Johnson cabal of Spectator connected right wing arseholes has come to light, or has been emphasised on the appointment of Allegra Stratton as press secretary. It was like a few weeks ago. The Richard Bergen awkward questions to the Secretary of State for Health, Matt Hancock, really the matter of the incompetence of Serco and the revolving door between Serco and the Health Ministry and the Justice Ministry, both of whom appoint Serco to undertake government tasks through this ideological matter of outsourcing, which it seems that Serco, through its think tank, the Serco Institute, has quite a lot of input into the policy of outsourcing. So that will be gone into, as I say, in What is Fascism? Episode 3, which will be coming shortly. So I think Mussolini, as I said before, you know, would look upon this detail of our political culture and smile, a smile of recognition. Now, I haven't mentioned authoritarianism and the authoritarianism of the Johnson government. And we are finding, again, in matter of current affairs, more and more instances of it, which Anna is particularly keen for us to do a podcast on, particularly the way that authoritarianism is being challenged by devolution, by the devolved governments of Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, and also by the big metro mayoralities like Greater Manchester, which has a metro mayor, Andy Burnham, a Labour guy. And has a population of over 3 million, you know, pretty similar to the population of Wales. So there is a kind of a collision happening currently in British politics between other centres of power other than Westminster, other than the Conservative cabinet. As the Conservative cabinet becomes more and more authoritarian and is working on its project of realising an authoritarian technocratic state. So, not a pretty picture. Anyway, thank you for listening, Joachim Rando, and speak to you very soon. Thanks to also our patrons who keep bunging us a bit of money. And I think what we intend to do, if we can get a few more patrons and we can pay for some extra space so that we can host the occasional video as well. So if you know anybody who might be interested in this take on things, on this philosophical musing and rambling, please recommend us to them. And if you've got a few dollars you can bung us, that would be great. So, over and out, wash your hands, look after yourselves, lots of love. Tarawan.